Hello and welcome back to the official Scottish Rugby Podcast. I'm Jamie McMillan. Joining me on the pod, as always, are Chris Patterson and Rachel Malcolm. And our special guest this week is Josh Bayliss, as he looks set to make his first start for Scotland this Saturday against Japan. Well, Rach, Mossy, a big weekend of rugby has just passed. We had Scotland against South Africa. The men took them on Saturday and the women on the Sunday. Rachel, we'll come on to that game for you and the team on Sunday. A great result against Japan. But I thought we'd kick off with the game on Saturday against South Africa. Mossy, we talked a little bit after the game. An interesting game. We know South Africa might not play the most attractive or exciting rugby, but it's effective, isn't it? And it works to an extent.
It certainly works, that's for sure. They're just so good at pressurising the opposition, and there's so many different ways to pressurise you. I thought, like, our defence was so good in the first 20-25 minutes. Not only that, but then to go ahead with that, breakout from Doohan and Finn kicking the penalty. And you thought, like, the psychological switch there, and, you know, from our perspective of just, like, dealing with their physicality really well, dealing with all the territory, all the possession, was really good. And then to go ahead, and then, you know, I think South Africa just know how to pressurise you. The one thing during that first 20-25 minutes that you kind of thought or worried that might come back and haunt us was the number of tackles we had to make and had to soak up a lot. And it was brilliant that we did, but then at the back of your mind you're thinking, like, the net effect of this in the long, in terms of the 80 minutes is a big ask. And then I think for the second 20 minutes or the kind of second quarter of the game, it really suited us. It was fractured. It was risky because you're playing as a team that has some brilliant individuals as well, but it wasn't in the structure that South Africa like to play, and they weren't dictating the structure. After half time, they completely dominated. You could almost hear the coaches at half time in South African dressing rooms just, I know, a few choice words, I'd imagine, shouting and screaming and saying, listen, what are we doing? We're playing effectively into Scotland's hands by forcing things, by getting caught up in the spirit of the game, maybe. And they just took total control in terms of territory, possession, the aerial kicking game, the one back kicks, the one all, most of the penalties of set piece was dominant. And they just, as exactly said, it's that they just applied pressure in so many different ways. Pressure through ball carrying in the first half, pressure through the penalty count throughout the game, pressure through their defence. When we had to chase the game and get back into it, they just flew off the line. And even sometimes without having to make tackles, they were pushing us back because of that blitz, that press. And you know what? They've done it to everybody in world rugby. That's why they're world champions. And they can make teams look much poorer than they actually are through pressure. And it works. And we all, not all, but a lot of fans will say, us included, like, you're going to have to change. You're going to have to adapt. You know, maybe you have to change your game or add new strength. But why? Because at the moment, it wins more often than not. And I know they had a couple of defeats in the autumn in the rugby championship, but they win an awful lot of games in the way they play, and they're very good at it.
Rich, what do you make of the game then? You're in camp with the team, your team hotel. I know you were all watching it. What did you make of it? Do you agree with Mossy's assessment?
Yeah, I think it was a tough game from Scotland's point of view because, like Mossy said, you know, they were doing a brilliant job in defence, particularly in that first half. I think the amount of time they spent in their own 22 to not concede that many points was incredible, because the South Africans are so good in and around those kind of tight areas. And to go into half time ahead and kind of really pushing South Africa, it did feel really positive in terms of where they were getting to. I think the second half it got a little bit more loose for Scotland, and it almost played into South Africa's hands because they just capitalised on that by putting pressure, particularly on our backs when we went out the back. And I think we also, like Mossy said, like, I think did look like we ran out of steam defensively a little bit towards the end of the game, just made poorer decisions, particularly out wide and things like that. So I do think, like, in terms of the first half performance against South Africa, who are just so good at the way they play and doing what they do, Scotland did extremely well. But you know, they struggled at set piece as well, which is always going to make your day a lot tougher when you haven't got clean balls to play off, particularly in the second half. And also kind of being on the wrong side of the penalty count at times makes it a lot harder, especially against a team who's dominating at set piece.
Yeah, if you win that penalty count, it allows you like so many opportunities to dictate the pace of the game. And South Africa do that really well and understand what pace they want to play at. And listen, they can raise it when they need to. And the tries were excellent, like really good. You know, pieces of attack and play, Dale Landis break and the offload for Mapimpi's first try, and then his second try. So the first one was quite unique in terms of it was a double turnover. So we turned them over, they turned us back over. So it was really unstructured. So they've got that threat to you know, cut loose at any point as well. But the majority of their time they spend in a structured state of a play that just strangles the life out of you as opposition. And they're just so physically big that they're able to do it more often than not. But penalty counts is a big, big thing because it gives, you know, see if, I don't know, what we're up to maybe 12, 13 penalties against. It was 5-0 at one point in the opening 20 minutes. And then it got back to 7-5. So it was obviously like a 5-2 in our favour in that middle, well, that sort of second quarter, where I thought, as I say, we got back into the game pretty well. And then got back into the game later on in the game actually as well after Hoggy's second try, but then just couldn't quite get that consistent set piece, consistent attack, consistent defence, consistent penalty count that allowed us to dictate the game. They just strangled it as I've done to a lot of other teams, and they'll do it to a few more teams as well.
What do you think of the way that they obviously bring on their bomb squad, but that kind of power play just before half time to change the whole front row? Yeah. What do you make of that? Is that just a psychological thing, do you think?
Well, I don't know. Like, I think at the time I thought it was bold. Obviously it is bold. Now they've got two brilliant front rows, like amazing front rows. And you could toss a coin as to which one's the starting front row and which one's the replacement front row. And they obviously understand their roles, whether they're starting or being replaced now. I just thought, and it may have been planned, and I read something afterwards that they said it was planned. The starting front row were told to empty themselves, but why in red time at the end of the first half?
Mm.
And I just felt that could be the coaches making a statement.
It was this really bizarre time.
Really bizarre time. Because, I mean, that game could have been on for a second. If they come on, the ball's knocked on or turned over or kicked out, it's a second. And you're like, well, if you're the player that's being replaced then and unmasked in that front row, that's a difficult situation. You're creating a situation that could potentially be a flashpoint with players being really, really unhappy. Yeah. And as it turned out, Vincent caught the penalty that Finn missed just at the end of the first half and then got penalised twice early in the second half. But then, as I say, Kitsoff came on, won a really crucial penalty, and Malcolm Martin. I mean, they're brilliant players. There's six brilliant players in the front row. Mm-hmm. But I think from a coaching perspective, that's a risk, because if it backfired and, say, Scotland had won and the front row hadn't had the impact it was, the original front row that started, you could cause a divide in the camp with that if it's not managed properly.
A million-dollar question for you both, then. How do you beat South Africa, then? How do you combat them? I know this is a question that all the coaches around the world will be trying to answer coming up to, you know, the Rugby Championship next year for them and the World Cup in 2023. You know, we've got them in our pool along with Ireland, and a yet to be determined side. How do you get past that? How do you break down that South Africa and allow how do we allow Scotland to play our game and not South Africa's?
This is probably a question for our attack guru, not me.
the first thing I would say is, like, if a lot of the opposition that South Africa play, ourselves included, England, where they played the weekend, obviously they've played Australia recently, they played New Zealand, and the Rugby Championship, Argentina. Like, if you deliver your best performance, I think it's good enough to beat them. Now, what it needs is you to be optimal performance. So I don't think the answer is known. I think it's just the accuracy or the execution has to be right on the money. I think in terms of we think that, I think you keep the ball on the field, so you don't kick the ball off to give their driving line out or their set piece. You try and eradicate as many mistakes as possible, so you don't give their scrum an opportunity to win penalties, to win field position, to gain territory. and possession. I think you do try and play quickly, but to play quickly, you have to be super aggressive and super accurate around contact. So I don't think it's an unknown as to how you beat them. I think most teams or a few teams will know how to beat them, but it just demands that, because it applies so much pressure, it demands a clinical execution of accuracy in everything you do. And I think that's what maybe would frustrate Scotland and fans and certainly staff and players from Saturday, is like, he didn't deliver her best performance. And I think if you do, then I believe South Africa are beatable. I don't think it's an unknown as to how to beat them. I just, as I say, it has to be a real good kind of level of accuracy. And teams will do it. And, you know, they will do it. And you got it, yeah. I mean, we have seen it. Australia beat them twice in the Rugby Championship. So there's not so much a format, it's just the execution of it, I think. Would you agree, Rach?
Yeah, and I think as well, like, being on the right side of the discipline side of things is going to be a massive thing against a team like South Africa, who have got such a, like you say, like six of the best front row in the world, regardless of who's on the pitch. You've got such a strong scrum, two absolute giants in the second row, so, you know, a very, very competent line out as well. So, you know, being disciplined and not giving away penalties, but that is comes down to luck at times and how the ref reads the game. So being super, super disciplined on that front is going to put you in a better place to then compete and beat them. And I think, yeah, like Mossy says, keeping the ball in play and trying to, I guess, try and keep possession as well, wear them down a little bit. I think Scotland, one thing that they didn't have was a huge amount of possession at the weekend. And that means that, you know, they are tiring across, like Scotland or whoever the opposition are tiring across the game because of how big they are physically. I think that's going to feed into it in the final quarter of the game, for example. So I think being on the right side of the penalty count and also having a bit more possession so that you aren't so worn down when it comes down to that last bit of the game is part of it. But yeah, against a team like that, you've just got to be super clinical and take your chances.
I think if you look at the two tries Scotland scored at the weekend, Hoggie's two tries, like how they were excellent tries. I think everybody would agree like how good they were. Now that's a positive for us because of how well, you know, we worked to score tries. But actually, it's a nod to South Africa's defence as well. That's how good your attack has to beat them, and you're just making it. Maybe fortunate in the first one, I thought it was maybe a forward pass in the build up as well. But the second one, we catch you drive a line. It's driven, you know, almost to the touchline. They defend the drive really well, and it still takes complete accuracy with time and execution and a wonder offload over the top for Doohan to get away under huge pressure. That's as fine margins as it's needed. And when you do get it right, it has to be right to score against them. So the two tries we scored were excellent, but they had to beat their defence. So for all we're talking about their ability to control the game with the ball in the hand, their defence is excellent as well. But it's just, and the pressure they put you under puts more pressure on your skills. So yeah, you've got to train under pressure. You've got to expect a massive amount of pressure in loads of different ways with and without the ball, and accurately execute what you've planned to do.
Yeah, I think that's one thing as well, actually, just touching on it. I think that last quarter is that decision making when you're under pressure. There's a lot of times we were forcing offloads when it might have been on against any other team, but because they were under that extra bit of pressure that South Africa's defence brings, it was the wrong decision. It's making the right decision in those final kind of stages of the game when you are tired, you're under pressure and under like an immense amount of pressure compared to some other teams as well.
Then they force you to throw that offload, don't they? Because the threat around contact, especially if they're coming forward, say if you've got the ball and you're trying to break and they're blitzing forward and they're catching you behind the gain line, and you can feel it, especially as you look and you know it yourself, Rach, as a player, you're like, I'm 3 or 4 metres behind the gain line here. I've got very little support. They're going to be thundering on it. I have to keep this ball alive or it's turned over anyway. Because, you know, so it's on that pressure of the physicality around the contact coming forward that forces you into what looks like a silly mistake. But actually, a lot of the times you throw that speculative offload or try and keep it alive off the floor is desperation, because if you don't, you're 99% going to be turned over anyway. Yeah. I keep coming back to this word pressure, but they're a good side. They understand what makes them successful, and they'll win a few more games. And they've done to pretty much every team around world rugby what they did to us at the weekend.
Yeah, a win for South Africa against the men on Saturday. But let's move across to Sunday now. And it was a win for the women against Japan at the Damhill Stadium in Edinburgh. A great occasion. Mossy and I were both there. Rachel, so was great result. So was Rachel. Yeah, Rachel was leading the charge. Rachel, thank goodness you were there, Rachel. But yeah, it was a great result, a great game. And we talked about it off the air. It was a great atmosphere as well, a really good crowd, a really noisy crowd as well, which was great. And I'll let you describe it, but it seemed you guys enjoyed that energy and got a lot from that fixture. But yeah, talk us through your feelings from the match on Sunday, Rach.
Yeah, I think it was, obviously we've been apart as a squad for about 6 weeks now, so it was brilliant for us to get the opportunity just to get back out there and kind of build on the momentum that we started at the qualifiers and keep kind of working towards our ultimate goal of qualifying for the World Cup. But in terms of the occasion, like I said after the game, it was probably one of the most enjoyable test matches I've ever played in, just because of, you know, we obviously haven't had a home crowd for 2 years, and to have a home crowd that was probably the loudest we've ever had, and the whole kind of atmosphere around the game pre, during and post was just amazing. You know, we felt such a massive buy-in from everyone there, and that just, it does just drive you forward. You know, I've never really felt it quite like it before, and I think after the game, I don't think we all realised quite how much we've missed having our family, friends and all the supporters there, because we're all pretty emotional just having that, and then you realise how important it is. But in terms of the game itself, I think first half we started really well. It was a pretty kind of well-organised attack, in particular in the first 20 minutes, which is good considering we've been apart for a wee while now. But that 20 minutes prior to halftime was pretty poor from our point of view. We went in at halftime really disappointed in kind of how we'd finished the half, and largely our defence. We'd got caught quite narrow a couple of times, just not nominating, not talking, and really poor try line defence as well. So we had a bit of a talking to at halftime, which was completely deserved. And I think the second half performance was a lot more clinical, both in terms of set piece, kind of organisation and our attack in from the backs as well. So yeah, generally just like a great experience, but also a good performance.
It was, wasn't it? That you're right on that kind of second quarter, wasn't it? It was just after, it was 20 minutes, 20 odd minutes where there was a red card for Japan, and it almost, I don't know, that was the strongest period for Japan. Yeah. They scored two tries, down to 14 players. And I think because the bit before halftime was really frustrating from your point of view, it was almost really quite good that it was just before halftime, because it gave you a real clarity as to what you had to improve. And I thought the start of the second half was brilliant, like yeah, absolutely brilliant in terms of the attack, the intensity, the physicality, the tries. And then it became just really, really dominant from Scotland's point of view. But the you mentioned that the effect of the atmosphere in the game on you, but I saw at the end as well that how much emotion and joy was on the players of the Japanese faces as well. They were almost blown away by the occasion, and as much as you were.
Yeah, no, Japan we've obviously played them twice now. They're a brilliant team. They're like the happiest bunch of rugby players you'll ever meet, and so much kind of, they show so much respect to their opposition and occasion as well. So I'm not surprised by that at all, because that is just kind of what they're like as players from my experience of them. And the atmosphere was incredible. I think that stadium really lends itself to the kind of crowd sizes we have at the moment in the women's game. And I think it's good to grow the game by having it by playing at the Damhill, because, you know, the kind of get the buzz, I guess, after the men's game on Saturday. And then it probably does pull in a few people to the game on Sunday. But for me, it was just brilliant to see as well how many, you know, young girls and boys were there. You know, that's a massive part of our why as a team. We're desperate to grow the women's game in particular in Scotland. And I think the biggest, like, you know, thing that we know is if you can't see it, you can't be it. So like the fact that we're getting the women's team out there and we're also putting on good performances and creating an atmosphere like that, it does make, you know, it more inspiring for these young girls and boys that are coming to watch. And that's massive for us. And it inspires us to be better as well, because that's exactly what drives us. So yeah, no, the atmosphere was really cool. And as I say, brilliant to see so many young fans there as well.
The tries you scored were good as well. Like the first try, the handling for Megan, I think Megan scored the first one in terms of almost like an edge attack, striking and then coming in the same way and the edge attack. I thought Lisa Thompson's line for her try was, you could see the structure building up to it and then execution of it, Chloe's try as well. And then there was a couple of tries built off defence where, you see, the second half, I thought you were utterly dominant. And then, you know, kicking the right time, execute, like almost allowing, I don't know if it was a deliberate ploy, but allowing Japan to almost try and force the game, and you just hit them again and again and again, force a turnover. And it was almost a counter-attacking, wasn't it? Like a couple of times, you just really rocked them back. A real clarity in how you try to play.
Yeah, it was a funny one actually, because how we kind of anticipated scoring wasn't necessarily how we did score. A lot of we kind of thought the battle would be won up front in terms of just how Japan had played the previous week against Wales. But because obviously we weren't getting a huge amount of change from our mall, just with, they obviously stepped, they didn't compete. And there was
they did that two or three times, didn't they?
So that kind of, and then the refereeing of that was like a little bit, we were unsure on a couple and then we got a couple and things like that. But we didn't really get as much from it as we wanted to. But like you say, so it shows we've got more than one place to attack from, because the mall has been pretty a good strength of ours over the previous games. But like you say, really well organised attack. And I think what we did well in the second half was earning that right to then go wide and play out the back. Because in the first half, I think we were maybe doing one carry and then trying to force it out the back or go wide too early. Whereas in the second half, we were getting really good change from our forwards just carrying through the guts of them and then finding space out wide. And I think, you know, Tomo's try, Lisa Thompson's try was just, that's Lisa Thompson through and through. Like, she's got probably the best rugby brain in our team, and picking that line and the timing of it and Nelly taking the ball to the line and just putting her into that space was unreal. And I think as well, Sarah Law's vision off the knock-on, just to the pick turnover, the ball up and feed it through on the turnover was... That again,
Rona was flying after it as well.
Yeah,
Rona had to make up a bit of ground there.
Yeah, but if anyone's going to do it, Rona Lloyd is, isn't she? So, a couple of really, really well worked tries, and also just again, like I touched on after the game, but just showing the maturity of where we're at, I think, in terms of our game management and recognition and stuff like that. And I think as well, like the dominant performance after the second half, having finished the first half in a not very good place. Again, shows that maturity. You know, in previous years, we probably would have come out and just carried on the way we'd finished the first half. But to flip the switch and really turn it on in the second half was proper pleasing and a good platform to work from.
And mirroring what we've seen with the men's team as well in the Open Nations series, a couple of caps coming on and new caps and doing really well. Both had really good debuts.
Yeah, no, I was really lucky to get to present the caps in front of the girls' family after the game. And for me, like Anne Young in particular, she's been, I think her first match camp was 2 years ago, so she was in our match camp for Japan 2 years ago, and she's just worked so hard. You know, she's trying to learn the tricks of the trade as a prop and all of that, and she's so diligent and hard working in and around the squad. And she really has earned her stripes in terms of earning the opportunity to play for Scotland, and brilliant for us to see her get her opportunity. And Shona is a wee bit different in that she's had a slightly quicker kind of rise to fame, as I said after the game. She's not spent as long in the squad, but from the minute she came in, she's been electric. You know, she brings a huge amount of intensity to training, so willing to learn and really try and push her game forward. She's been involved with GB Sevens over the last couple of months, which I think has paid dividends in terms of her skill set, her understanding and all of these things. Brilliant to see her get the opportunity of 15s, and I'm pretty sure she's got a very big future ahead of her as well.
I believe you had a bit of a, you had some great good luck messages before the game as well. We're just going to play them just now so the listeners can hear. So here's the good luck messages that the squad received on Sunday morning.
All right, ladies, I just wanted to wish you luck tomorrow against Japan. Let's go!
Well, Rach, not bad to hear from Gerard Butler. Was that a nice surprise for you on Sunday?
Yeah, I actually heard a slightly different version of the message that wasn't fit for public use, but it was really cool. It's always nice to get any good luck messages, but especially from someone like Gerard Butler, a good Scot. But yeah, no, it was great.
Yeah, he was with Darius. I don't know if you guys remember Darius from back in the day. Yeah, absolute banger of a song, Colourblind. But he was actually with Gerard Butler, and I would never ever have put them two together, but definite combination. So Gerard Butler was at the game along with Biffy Clyro and Sam Hewn from Outlander. So a lot of celebs and a lot of people endorsing the women's game as well. So great to see. Well, I was delighted now to be joined on the podcast by Josh Bayliss. Josh, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. Thank you. No, thanks very much for having me.
No, pleasure. And first of all, we have to say congratulations. You've been selected for your first start this weekend against Japan. How are you feeling about your first start for Scotland this weekend?
Yeah, no, can't wait. It's been a sort of whirlwind last couple of weeks. Amazing experience being in camp and getting to run out at Murray Field for my debut, and just can't wait to sort of get going from the start of the game this time.
Yeah, you take you back to that game against Australia, Josh. It was a tight old encounter, but are you allowed to feel, or do you feel as if it's a first cap in that situation, or are you just, you're aware of it, but the focus is so much on coming on, doing a job, getting everything right, or could you have a wee kind of burst of pride underneath it all with a focus?
Oh yeah, no, massively. I mean, I was definitely nervous, sort of sitting on the bench. I think I used a lot of nervous energy before I got on. Once you sort of get on the pitch, it's a game of rugby, and you just want to do what you can to win. And then sort of off, as soon as that sort of final whistle goes and you've won the match, that's where all the emotion sort of comes into it. But no, it was an incredible experience and one I'll definitely never forget.
I think it must be harder to make your debut off the bench. Mm-hmm. Then start, because at least you know your start point, you know when you're going, and even being lucky enough to earn a few caps in the career, like even deep into your career, when you're on the bench, it's a completely different mindset and a completely different preparation, isn't it? That unknown. Rachel, you'll be the same as well. Like, yeah. It's a different mindset, and you burn off so much energy, and you almost feel every contact you're in, you think about what would you do in every situation. So I think maybe it's almost harder. Would that make sense to do that first cap off the bench?
Yeah, no, you kind of sort of watch the game in a different way than you would if you were just sort of spectating, I guess. You're like you say, you're in every play, and you're just trying to make sure you know your role exactly when you come on. I'm quite a thinker anyway, a bit of a worrier. So just definitely thinking through everything a million and one times in my head.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Are you the same, Rich?
I'm pretty much the worst worrier in our team, which is probably not a good trait as a leader, but I'm the exact same. And I think as well, like, I don't know if you agree, Josh, but like, especially on a first cap, when you don't know how long you're going to get, and you just want to prove yourself and have an impact positively. Whereas, do you feel a wee bit different approaching the game this weekend, knowing that you've got that time to kind of settle into the game and make your mark, versus kind of that mindset of, I don't know how long I'm going to get, I need to go in and just empty the tank. How do you kind of approach that differently?
Yeah, definitely. I think you're always sort of thinking when you're on the bench, you need to have an impact. You need to be a positive impact. I guess when you're on from the start, you can get yourself into the game, and you, like you say, you've got time to do what you need to do. It will be a different experience, I think, but yeah, I'll definitely still have that nervous energy before the game.
And the other thing about being on the bench, you could be covering, as you do, Josh, well, both of you, but you cover three or four positions. So you're actually watching the game in three or four different positions, thinking what we do where, and if that was me in that situation. So it's a
it's a minefield. But anyway, we won't need to worry about that. starting, delighted to see you starting the weekend. And maybe before we focus too much on Japan, reverse or rewind the back to the summer as well, because you've been involved in the summer camp and unfortunately the games didn't go ahead. But how valuable do you think that time spent in camp was in terms of kind of how well you've picked everything up and how well it's been going in November?
Yeah, massively. And even just having that sort of week in the Six Nations prior was just huge in terms of picking up little calls and learning how your teammates play and just getting to know everyone on and off the pitch. Is it would have been really tough sort of just coming in fresh and picking everything up and trying to learn everything on the run. So it's although it was gutting not being able to play over summer, it was good in terms of building those relationships and learning moves and whatnot.
Have you played with any of the boys before?
So I went to school with Adam Hastings. He was a year above me at school. so I know Hastings well. And other than that, not really. A few of the boys that sort of play in the Prem.
Yeah.
Play against him, and then Jamie Batty when he was down at Bath last year.
Of course, yeah.
But no, not really. It was a lot of new faces and people to get to know.
How easy is it? Because I think that's one thing, certainly when I used to play, you'd worry about joining a new squad and you'd worry about, you know, yourself, but other people. I think I know the answer to this question, but how easy is the environment that Gregor's created, that the players have created in Scotland to come in virtually known next to no one?
Yeah, no, I mean, sort of before I came in, I was, like you say, look, very anxious and just wanted to get stuck in and get to know everyone and almost skip that first stage of getting to know everyone. But the environment here is unbelievable. It's unlike anything I've sort of experienced before. And it's geared solely towards sort of player-led and getting to build those relationships on and off the pitch. I think that's had a massive impact in sort of feeling comfortable quite early on, which, like I say, I haven't really experienced anywhere else.
And if you look ahead to the game against Japan, I think it's I think you're really suited to this. Josh, you're a dynamic, explosive, powerful player. I think I just love the open field, love the fast-paced element of the game. It really suits, you know, our game here, and hopefully suit this weekend. It's a game, hopefully, that you can have a big involvement in, because, you know, Japan will play at that tempo as well.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's a really exciting test. And like you say, we're going to have to be switched on for 80 minutes or however long it's going to take, because they're going to throw everything at us and things we probably can't prep for or haven't prepped for. And that's a really exciting challenge, because it's not your sort of run-of-the-mill game, and it's going to test us, going to test our defence and going to test our attack and seeing how we can break them down. I know it's just a really exciting challenge for everyone, I think.
Will you have family up or friends?
Yeah, family going to come up again. Not quite as many as for the debut, but that'll still be a few, I think.
And are they nervous or less nervous than you?
Oh, my mum will be more nervous. Yeah, she'll hate watching. but yeah, wouldn't rather be anywhere else, so...
Did I read somewhere, Josh, did your family fly in from Singapore for the Australia game? Is that right?
Yeah, my dad did. Yeah, I had no idea until sort of after the game. I saw him in the stands and was that was pretty emotional, to be fair.
Yeah,
oh, that's pretty cool. So you had no idea, you just literally saw him in the stand.
Yeah.
Oh, probably good you didn't see him till after the game, if that
exactly,
is.
Yeah.
Sometimes those moments can catch you off guard right before a game.
Yeah. I might have had an absolute shocker for that last time.
we're all rooting for you at the weekend. We can't wait to see the final game in the Autumn Nations series and be your second cap. And we look forward to what the future holds for you, Josh. Thanks for coming on, and we'll hopefully get you back on the podcast soon.
Awesome. No, thanks very much, guys.
Thanks, Josh.
Cheers, Josh. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
See you later.
Well, we've looked back the weekend, so let's now look forward to the match with Japan, the final game for Scotland in the Autumn Nations series. Mossy, I'll come to you first. Josh touched on it there. You know, they'll have to be fully alert for the full 80 minutes and more against Japan. A fair assumption on Japan would be they maybe haven't been as clinical or as the best performance that we've seen from them in the past, but, you know, away from home, you know, haven't played for a long time. What do you expect from Japan this weekend, Mossy?
Well, I think we've unfinished business, haven't we? I think you're right in saying that Japan aren't as quite as clinical and slick as they were in their home World Cup. One or two changes on the field, totally different environment, obviously, in terms of the support and the kind of preparation for that was second to none. So, but they're still a real threat. They came close to beating Australia a couple of weeks before we played Australia. They were poor against Ireland, and obviously played at the weekend against Portugal. So I think a lot of the players who maybe played against Portugal will be changed to what will face us on Saturday. But we know that they'll play quickly. We know they've got a real threat in terms of set piece attack. That they're just the tempo they want to play at, the execution and accuracy they have. They've got a brilliant attacking short kicking game as well. And they'll find the space. If you leave space somewhere, they'll find it. I think, from a Scotland perspective, if we can get a lot of territory, if we can force them back, drive them back, try and force Japan to overplay in some ways, we can hopefully capitalise on forcing errors. But they're a quality side. They're physical, they're hard, they're quick, they're abrasive, and they'll test you, unlike many other teams will test you. But as Josh and you say, you have to be on it because they've got so many different plays and strategies of first phase. It's very difficult to prepare to face against them all. So you might actually come up against someone that's new or they haven't run too often because they're very innovative. So it's a pressure on your senses in terms of concentration. But I think Josh is right. I think he's ready-made for this game as well. He's such a dynamic ball player. He's so athletic. He'll fit perfectly into the system of a quick game. And let's be honest, if we can get him on the ball in space, he's going to be doing really well. His impact, the ball in hand, and as a defender, we saw the strip he made against Australia, but as an open field runner, he really is world class. So it's really exciting to see him. And I think that the game will suit. I think he'll suit the game and the game will suit him.
It's quite a good test as well, do you think, for the boys? You know, they talk about wanting to have the world's best defence and to play against a team like South Africa who you kind of know what's coming, although it's really still very difficult to play and come up against. You do kind of know what you're up against. Whereas, do you think playing a team where you don't know as much what to expect and also who have got that kind of large kind of armory of different moves and options, do you think that is what they need to kind of keep them on their toes and keep kind of improving that defence?
Definitely. I think it's great because what that does is you defend what's in front of you and you defend what's in front of you by sticking to your systems and trusting each other and being accurate in your tackle and your post-tackle work. Sometimes when let's be honest, most teams know what South Africa going to do to you. You've already said, Rach, and the question of you is, can you stop it? Whereas this weekend, you don't know what's going to happen, so your systems have to be right. You have to be working together. You can't try and solve something individually and put yourself under pressure. So I think it puts decision-making at the heart of your defence. And then, obviously, the non-negotiables in terms of physicality and aggression and drive and desire all have to be there. But you're going to be tested. Your decision-making is going to be tested like it wasn't last week and it probably wasn't the week before. And you add to that, that's done really quickly as well. It's a good test. But I suppose if you take a step beyond that, prevention is better than cure. So let's starve Japan of possession and make them make the decisions in defence and make them tackle Scotland and make them stop the drives. And that's the way to do it, I think. So you want to have a lot of possession against Japan, and let's hope we can do that this weekend.
Mossy, I'm going to make you feel maybe a little bit old here, but do you know what was almost 17 years to the day on Saturday? Years.
Well, no, I don't, but I'm going to hazard a guess that the last time, when we played Japan.
Correct, and the score was
McDermott Park.
Yeah, Scotland 100, Japan 8.
Yeah.
And that just shows you, doesn't it, that the
how progress. Many years, sorry, 17?
So you played them on the 13th of November 2004. So yeah, 17 years ago on Saturday.
And I must Yeah. I must only have been about 3 or 4 years old then.
you were very, very fresh-faced. But to be fair, though, they're a different team now, obviously. I mean, they are a competitive team, and it will be a great contest at BT Murrayfield for the final match in the Autumn Nation Series. But 17 years ago, wow, time flies, eh? Well, that's all from us this week on the official Scottish Rugby Podcast. Thank you, as always, so much for listening. If you enjoyed it, like and subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to. And as always, we'll be back next week with more exclusive content.